claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where there's a lot going on here. A nice summary overview was given by Jim Hoft, who's the editor and founder of the Gateway Pundit, to Pete Santilli, that the next 2 to 3 weeks are going to be crucial in the effort to save America, including Arizona's current forensic audit, Cyber Ninja's report of finding deleted files from the November 3rd, 2020 election, and being able to restore them. Democrat operative Ryan Massey is the only person to infiltrate the audit floor. The FBI narrative of January 6, 2021 insurrection falling apart. Everything they told us was an absolute lie. Possible forensic audits for Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, and New Hampshire upcoming. New Hampshire citizens standing up against corruption in Windham. Mark Elias, attorney with Perkins Coie, in his role in trying to stop the audits across the country. Hardly surprising, because they're exposing the massive fraud that took place in this election, which the Democrats are eager to conceal, lest they lose such sense of legitimacy as they may retain at this point in time, which among those who have been paying attention is none at all. Meanwhile, we have the Biden administration hitting a roadblock after a judge has made a ruling about all of the programs in which they're giving priorities to minorities and others who are disadvantaged upon their race and their gender. Here's a report about it. President Joe Biden's administration has implemented a variety of different programs to help aid people hurt by the pandemic. However, many have a strange racial slant. For example, he's prioritizing loans to minority farmers instead of all farmers. And he's done the same thing with grants for restaurants. But now a judge has put a stop to it. On May 16th, the Texas cafe owner, Philip Greer, sued the Small Business Administration alleging he wouldn't be able to get a restaurant revitalization fund grant as the Biden administration was giving women and racial minorities priority. He said the program was illegal and unconstitutional because it based the decision on whether to give someone a grant based on their sex or their race. This is so obviously the case that it's frankly stunning that the Biden administration would have adopted the plan they have planned, you know, to give this, because all of the laws against discrimination founded originally against discrimination against blacks equally apply to discrimination against whites. It's ridiculous that some in the Democrat Party are trying to insist that it's not even possible to discriminate against whites, which is about as ludicrous as it gets. The federal judge blocked the program. He's granted a temporary restraining order, saying the plaintiff, in this case, Philip Greer, is likely to win the lawsuit against the Biden administration, that if the program is deemed unconstitutional, Greer will also likely win a grant from the Revitalization Fund. As I've mentioned on other occasions, the very idea of having, the problem becomes when these unconstitutional moves are made and the time they're actually declared to be unconstitutional. That's when all the funny business takes place and the damage can occur. But, you know, you would think that the Democrats, I mean, there are a lot of rather experienced figures here, would know better. But their agenda, which is really a communist socialist agenda, moves them to go in this direction in spite of the blatant unconstitutionality of it all. I mean, blatant unconstitutionality. There's nothing subtle about this at all. It is blatant. Meanwhile, the U.S. has seized $90,000 from a man who sold footage of the U.S. Capitol riot. You're not going to be surprised at this story, but it is very significant. U.S. authorities have confiscated roughly $90,000 from a Utah man who sold footage of a woman being fatally shot at the January 6th attack on the Capitol by, according to this article, supporters of former President Donald Trump. We know it wasn't supporters of former President Donald Trump at all, but mostly Antifa and others masquerading as Trump supporters. Where it's simply outrageous what's going on here. Prosecutors have also filed additional criminal charges against the man, John Earl Sullivan, also known John Sullivan, self-described political activist, actually Antifa leader, well known, accused of entering the Capitol building, participating in the riots. Filings unsealed on Thursday showed. Sullivan now faces a total of 8 criminal counts, including weapons charges related to the riot. Prosecutors have charged more than 440 people in connection with the attack, in which, again, falsely alleges Trump supporters stormed the Capitol after he gave a speech to them repeating his true claim that the 2020 presidential election was stolen through widespread voting fraud. A mob smashed some windows, fought police, sent lawmakers into hiding. 5 people are supposed to have died, but we know 3 of those were supposed to have been, you know, older Trump supporters who apparently had heart attacks. And the Ashley Babbitt, who's supposed to have been shot. The Capitol Police officer, they claimed, was smashed over the head by a fire extinguisher, who also appears to have died from a heart problem. Many participants, including Sullivan, posted their actions on social media. According to the court filings, Sullivan portrayed himself as an independent journalist who was reporting on the chaos, but actually encouraged the other participants to burn the building and engage in violence. Nice to hear that amount of truth. Sullivan recorded video of the confrontation between rioters and police outside the House of Representatives chamber, including the shooting of protester Ashley Babbitt, And according to court filings boasted to an unknown witness, my footage is worth like millions of dollars. He sold it to several news outlets for a total of $90,000. The news outlets were redacted from the warrant, but it appears to have been NBC and CNN. According to media reports, Sullivan participated in Black Lives Matter protests last year, while other Black Lives Matter activists in his home state have disavowed him. Here's a report about it, a tweet from way back when. CNN and NBC paid $35,000 each to left-wing activist John Sullivan for his footage of Trump supporter Ashley Babbitt being fatally shot inside the Capitol. My impression had been they were giving him this money in advance to make it appear as though he were a journalist there, but this may be right, that he actually took the footage and then he was paid for it. Meanwhile, we've had exposure that I've repeated before. Already on January 15th, for example, Carl Durkin reported in Guns and Crime, Leftism News, Terrorism, James, brother of accused leftist provocateur John Sullivan, claims 226 Antifa members started the Capitol riots. Here's a statement from James. I'm currently working with the FBI to expose and place total blame on John and the 226 members of Antifa who instigated the Capitol riot. Here's a timeline that shows that Trump people had nothing to do with it. The first protesters were arriving at the Capitol as early as 12:40. By 1 p.m., Capitol Police Chief was seeing officers attacked. By 1:09, the Capitol Police Chief was requesting National Guards. We also know now, by the way, that the New York Times has reported that they had warnings in advance that the Capitol was going to be attacked the day before, which means it cannot have been the Trump people who were responsible as a result of an incitement by Donald Trump, where his speech didn't even conclude until 1:11. That's after all these other events of the first protesters arriving, officers being attacked, and the request for National Guard. Trump supporters, Donald hadn't even finished speaking until 1:11, and no Trump supporter going to a speech to Donald Trump is going to leave before the man finishes speaking. And since he's very extemporaneous, you could never know when that would occur until after he had finished. And we know from clips, he talked about them peacefully protesting the theft of the election, and we have, you know, mountains of evidence of the theft of the election. So the ongoing efforts to, every time there's any reference to the election as having been stolen as being false, is itself untrue, a propagandistic claim, because the Democrats are worried that their false sense of authority and legitimacy is going to be thereby undermined and destroyed, which is 100% correct. We already have massive evidence from Sidney Powell, from Ellen Wood, from Mike Lindell. I mean, there's no question about it. And then as the Arizona audit proceeds, as audits in these other states, it's going to become further and further obvious. So you had the Capitol breached, but it turns out that there are very heavy doors that maintain the Capitol. They're magnetically controlled from the inside. There's no way the Capitol could have been breached without the collusion of the Capitol Police. And it does appear that this was an organized event by Nancy Pelosi in order to have the disruption, not of the tabulation of the electoral votes, which is how the mainstream is presented, but rather of discussion of the theft of the election. Now, no one was more motivated to have discussion of the theft of the election than Donald Trump. And the very idea that these would be Trump supporters rushing into the Capitol in order to disrupt discussion of the theft of the election is a manifest absurdity, which is why you get the false reports that these were supposed to be Trump supporters who were trying to disrupt the electoral vote. This was a preliminary discussion long before they would hold the electoral vote. No one had a greater motive for disrupting that than Nancy Pelosi. No one was in a better position to make it happen the Nancy Pelosi, because the person in charge of the Capitol Police is a Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Now, what's going on here, of course, is they want to weaponize the January 6th intrusion, and people went into the Capitol with any doubt. I mean, I've got footage that I have played on various shows, 21 minutes, where you can see that there were directors and managers telling those who were coming in, at the invitation of the Capitol Police, basically the Capitol Police welcomed them and allowed them to enter, which was, of course, I am suggesting exactly what Nancy Pelosi wanted to have happen, telling them where to go, what to do, even following the events involving the purported shooting of Ashley Babbitt, where I'm very surprised there haven't been charges brought if the shooting were legit, because there was no deadly threat or serious threat of injury to the party who shot at Ashley Babbitt, who was still in the window seeking to enter a hallway space, and where when the shot was fired, there was no reaction by the crowd there. It was as though they knew it was coming. No flinching, no ducking for cover. Ashley, in my opinion, is not actually shot. She was hit in the neck. There'd be lots of blood. There wasn't a lot of blood. There does appear to have been a little bit of blood, which appears to have been given to her in a little blood packet, so to create a certain sense of realism about it. She was laid gently on the ground. She was taken out, being carried by her feet and her shoulders. This is totally improper in terms of medical procedures, because it could aggravate any bona fide actual wounds. So this all appears to be faked and fabricated. Meanwhile, we have this new attorney general who'd been previously blocked from as a nominee for the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland, asking Congress for more money to protect civil rights and prosecute hate crimes. But what's really going on here is a new war on domestic terror, a new war on domestic terror. I've got a new article by Ben Barty on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. I'll share parts of it with you. This is very good, very appropriate, very important. The deep state has big plans for a very particular demographic among U.S. citizenry. The terminology tossed into the word salad vary: domestic extremist, homegrown terrorist, right-wing fanatics, bitter clingers. But they all mean more or less the same thing: the conservative, Christian, gun-owning, mostly white, non-compliant remnants of the middle American middle class. Operating in lockstep, the apparatus of the deep state intelligence community, military industrial complex have set their sights squarely on uncooperative libertarian elements inside the United States. In other words, if you believe in the Constitution today, if you believe in the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, if you believe in the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, then you are, in this new language of this new administration, a domestic terrorist. Believe me, there's no stronger credential in the eyes of these operatives than that you voted for Donald Trump. Mark my words. How precisely are these libertarian extremists, or whatever buzzword de jour the corporate media has weaponized at the moment, defined? Unsurprisingly, loosely and conveniently, however the deep state wishes, with a broad imaginative brushstroke to sweep up the maximum volume of political opponents possible. An unholy alliance of religious extremists, authoritarians, fascists, bigots, racists, nativists, even libertarians. This posturing against right-wing extremists, again, simply meaning any individual or group who challenges the dominant neoliberal power structure, is not new in DC rhetoric, but has intensified dramatically since the so-called insurrection of January 6th. Former CIA Director John Brennan made the statement that the Biden intel community is moving in laser-like fashion to try to uncover as much as they can about the pro-Trump insurgency. Law enforcement, Homeland Security, intelligence, even the Department of Defense is doing everything possible to root out what seems to be a very, very serious and insidious threat to our democracy and our republic. See how we know it was mostly Antifa members. It was anti-Trump people masquerading as Trump. So they're using this, a classic false flag operation. Adolf Hitler could not have pulled this off better. So they're taking a page from Hitler's playbook and that of his propagandists. That's exactly what the Democrats are doing. The article continues. The CIA is by no means alone in its efforts. This is a carefully coordinated, tightly choreographed operation spanning multiple federal agencies, the so-called Alphabet Boys, for their myriad acronyms, including the FBI, the Department of Defense, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, Homeland Security, NSA, U.S. Department of Justice. Continuing, the U.S. Department of Justice, the enormously powerful agency tasked with enforcing federal law, recently requested an 11% overall budget increase to combat domestic extremism, racial inequality, environmental degradation, and gender violence. Attorney General Merrick Garland told lawmakers Tuesday the Justice Department needs more money for Biden administration priorities, including combating domestic extremism. Mr. Garland has prioritized efforts to fight domestic terrorism and protect civil rights over the department's focus during the Trump administration on street crime and gangs. The department is also seeking an additional $101 million to address the rising threat of domestic terrorism. Now, do you notice what's missing here? When they talk about domestic terrorism, what's missing here? There's nothing about Black Lives Matter. There's nothing about Antifa. These are the organizations, the gangs that truly qualify as domestic terrorist organizations for all the looting and the rioting, including even killing of persons that occurred all through the summer. Not a word about them. Notice. This is how corrupt is this Department of Justice. This is how perverted is this Biden-Harris administration. They're going after anyone who supported Donald Trump as a domestic terrorist, but the actual real domestic terrorists, where most of the Trump supporters are in favor of the Constitution and the rule of law and the due process, they want to give a free ride, a blank check, to Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and they're even letting violent felons out of prison so they can create more lawlessness by joining gangs. I mean, it's completely outrageous. The article continues. One of the major priorities of the deep state's counter-extremism operations is disarming the American population. Yes, notice well. In its plea for more resources for the cause, the DOJ submitted a request for an additional $232 million to curb gun violence. Get this, quote, the additional funding would be used to support improved background checks and more comprehensive red flag laws, which allow the police to temporarily confiscate firearms from people who are deemed a danger to themselves or others. In a nation whose school children learned real lessons from history and the tenets of civilized society, none of this would be tolerated. Unfortunately, instead, 21st century children of American public schools learn about gender pronouns and critical race theory from lobotomized education majors fresh out of their indoctrination camps in the liberal social sciences. I wish I could say he's got it wrong, but he hasn't. He's got it exactly right. What is afoot is the American empire crumbling in upon itself. The comeuppance of decades of public indifference to immoral foreign occupations of millions of dead civilians overseas, all in the service of advancing the interests of a tiny globalist elite that benefits from war. The citizenry did nothing to stop the Iraq or Afghanistan wars, and now the ruling elite's tools of external control and subjugation of faraway populations has been turned inward. Consequently, normal Americans, even nonviolent, relatively apolitical ones who go to work, love their families, and just want to be left alone, are in the crosshairs of a murderous, bloodthirsty national security state run by these Democrat socialist communists whose figurehead is Joe Biden. It is disgusting. Again, he continues, the phenomenon of a government directing its violence onto the population it theoretically exists to protect is not an overnight development. Since the heyday of the Bush-era neocons' Orwellian unwinnable war on terror, civil liberty activists have warned that the siege tactics employed in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other immoral foreign wars would inevitably be imported onto U.S. soil for use upon the American population. Here's a Major Howard Money Colvin from The Wire saying, this ain't police work. No, it ain't. I mean, I can send any fool with a badge and a gun up on them corners and jack a crew and grab vials. But policing, I mean, you call something a war and pretty soon everybody's going to be running around acting like warriors. They're going to be running around on a damn crusade, storming corners, slapping on cuffs, racking up body counts. And when you at war, you need an effing enemy. And pretty soon, damn near everybody is your effing enemy. And soon the neighborhood you're supposed to be policing is just occupied territory. That's exactly right. And that's how these local police forces are trained by Israeli trainers. I mean, how absurd that we're sending our local police to Israel to be trained to treat American civilians as they treat Palestinians. The new war on domestic terror waged by the deep state, aided and abetted by the corporate media, is not about liberation or protecting democracy, just as a previous war on terror at the turn of the century was not about those things in the far-off regions where they were waged. Instead, we're witnessing an unprecedented attempt to assert domination and control over a non-compliant U.S. population, increasingly frustrated with the unrepresentative federalized forces that occupy this land, only this time the battlefields will be Nebraska and Mississippi, not Fallujah, and the surgeons are average Americans, not Iraqis. When they are met with force, that's what you can expect to have happen. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? and that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I certainly expect to open the lines for callers during the show, but it may not be already at the end of the first hour. It may be into the second, so stand by and I'll keep you posted. Meanwhile, we have an ex-Israeli pilot. Our army is a terrorist organization run by war criminals, published in Global Research, which I highly recommend. A former Israeli Air Force pilot has described the Israeli government and army as terrorist organizations run by war criminals. Now, that's an appropriate description of a terrorist organization, I think, unlike members of the Republican Party or of militias or people who voted for Donald Trump. I mean, think of the absurdity of what's going on here in Washington with this Merrick Garland-led Department of Justice seeking to basically terrorize the American people. This officer, who is a captain in the Air Force, Shapira, had resigned from the Israeli army in 2003 at the height of the Palestinian Second Intifada, explained in an exclusive interview why he realized after joining the army that he was part of a terrorist organization. I recognized during the Second Intifada that the Israeli Air Force and Israeli military, what they were doing were war crimes, terrorizing a population of millions of Palestinians. When I realized that, I decided not just to leave, but to organize other pilots who had publicly refused to take part in these crimes. As a child in Israel, you're being brought up in a very strong Zionist militaristic education. You know almost nothing about Palestine. You don't know about the 1948 Nakba. You don't know about ongoing oppression. Ever since leaving the Israeli army, Shapira has launched a campaign encouraging other military members to disobey orders to attack Palestinians. The campaign has led to 27 other army pilots be discharged from their posts in the Israeli Air Force since 2003. In the last week, Israeli warplanes have waged hundreds of strikes against Palestinian civilians in the besieged Gaza Strip, killing This is a minimal number. At the time the article was published, 188 Palestinians, 55 children, 33 women and wounding, 1,230. The numbers, I have no doubt, are actually much greater. Meanwhile, and this is published in Sputnik News, we're not reading about it in the American mainstream. It's not being published in the Wisconsin State Journal, for example. Israeli flags burned, cars smashed after pro-Palestinian protesters take to the streets in London. On Thursday, Israel and the Hamas movement agreed to an Egypt-brokered ceasefire after 11 days of rocket attacks and airstrikes that left, now the number's up to 243 Palestinians and 12 Israeli dead. Several thousand marched in a rally in central London to support the Palestinians on Saturday, marched toward Westminster and the buildings of the British government through Hyde Park, the Houses of Parliament. The protesters, however, faced criticism for holding signs referring to Adolf Hitler, burning Israeli flags, and smashing some cars in the process. Several posters reading, "Stop doing what Hitler did to you, Israel, the new Nazi state," or "Holocaust Part 2" were seen during the protests. And given the common understanding of the historical narrative, in other words, not trying to be overly precise about those having been labor camps rather than death centers, this is all very appropriate, because what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians is what the Jews have claimed the Nazis did to them, falsely, albeit in the case of the Nazi treatment of the Jews in these work camps, but truthfully, alas, in the way in which the Israelis are treating the Palestinians in Gaza, which has been described as the world's largest concentration camp. The protesters also burned Israeli flags outside of the country's embassy in London and smashed cars. According to the Daily Mail, they smashed a sports car. But meanwhile, Reuters reporting, it was like a tsunami. Gazans emerged to see the damage after fighting ends. Here's a photograph of a Palestinian woman with her hand on her head after returning to her destroyed home following the Israeli-Hamas truce. Gaza. After huddling at home during Israel's 11-day bombardment of Gaza, the shock of seeing houses and other buildings destroyed after yet another conflict tempered Palestinian joy that this round of fighting was over. "It's like a tsunami," said Abu Ali, standing next to a heap of rubble that had been a 14-story tower in Gaza City. "How can the world call itself civilized? This is a war crime. We are ruled by laws of the jungle," he said Friday after the truce was declared. Commercial buildings, residential towers, private homes across the Palestinian enclave, that is, the residence to 2 million people, were damaged or destroyed by the time Israel and Gaza's Hamas's rulers announced the ceasefire. Israel said airstrikes hit legitimate military targets, and it did everything to avoid civilian casualties, including prior warnings. When it was about to strike residential buildings that it said also had a military use. But really, you know, the truth of the matter is they're using any excuse they can to slaughter Palestinians. No one in the world who's followed all of these events has any doubt. Gaza's housing ministry said Thursday, shortly before hostilities ended, 16,800 housing units were damaged, with 1,800 unfit for living, 1,000 destroyed. Palestinian medics said 243 people were killed in airstrikes. My guess would be a whole lot more, because a lot of the defenders went into the tunnels right before the airstrikes, where the Israelis had tricked them and are buried underground. Maybe their bodies aren't available for counting, but they're dead nonetheless. Israel said 13 persons were killed by barrages of rockets that slammed into homes, synagogues, and other buildings. "We returned to our homes to find destruction," said Samir Abdallah Nasir, whose two-story house was hit by a blast. No place to sit, no water, no electricity, no mattresses, nothing. Gaza now faces the task of rebuilding after the fourth conflict with Israel since Hamas took control of the enclave in 2007, setting up a rival pounder center to the Palestinian Authority in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. We're now back to the dilemma of Gaza reconstruction. Who will carry it out, Hamas or the Palestinian Authority, and who is going to pay? Some people have still not been compensated for their losses in 2014, referring to the last war with Israel, which lasted for 50 days, this only 11. Gaza's challenge is compounded by an Israeli-led blockade, also supported by Egypt, which shares a short border with the enclave. Israel says it imposes a blockade to prevent weapons reaching militants. Palestinians call it collective punishment. Now, let me make a few comments here about the massiveness of what's going on here. The Israelis were pounding schools, hospitals, infrastructure, all of which is illegal under international law. These are war crimes, which the Israelis perpetrate again and again and again against the Palestinians. And when the United Nations seeks to condemn it by resolutions, Israel's best friend, the United States, blocks them. This is such shameful. The history of the United States before the world of defending Israel from totally justified, completely warranted criticism over their abuse of Palestinian rights and their wholesale slaughter of the Palestinian people is a disgrace, just a disgrace. Every American should understand what's going on here. This is completely wrong and inappropriate. Meanwhile, surprise, surprise, Israel resumes spraying herbicides along the Gaza fence. Israeli authorities have confirmed they resume spraying herbicides along the fence separating the besieged Gaza Strip from Israel after having supposedly refrained from aerial spraying throughout 2019, reported Haaretz. Last week, the army sprayed the border area for 3 days. Israeli planes regularly spray herbicides on Gaza farmland, causing heavy losses to farmers, deepening food security, and possibly causing dangerous diseases to Palestinians. But of course, they're trying to drive the Palestinians off of the land. They want it for themselves. They don't give a damn about the Palestinians. I mean, anyone who has studied the history of Israel knows this to be a fact. Israeli Defense Ministry told the Israeli newspaper, Haaretz, that the aerial spraying is done from time to time on based on security needs, but solely within Israel's territory, which obviously is just one more monster lie than which we can expect nothing else from Israeli spokespersons. The Palestinian Agricultural Ministry, for example, said herbicide damaged 14,000 dunams of agricultural land in Gaza from 2014 to 2018. The Israeli army regularly sprays herbicide on Palestinian arable land close to the fence separating the besieged territory from Israel, wrote Palestinian journalist Ramzi Baroud and Italian writer Roma Rubio. The chemical it uses most often is glyphosate, which has been proven to cause cancer. According to the Red Cross, these activities not only damage Palestinian crops, but also contaminate the soil and the water. Surprise, surprise. Now, Edward Henry has published what I think is quite a brilliant article, that Hamas is an Israeli-controlled radical Islamic agent provocateur. In other words, that Israel created Hamas so it could use it to justify Israeli strikes into Gaza or the West Bank anytime it wants, but in particular in Gaza, since the Palestinian Authority controls the West Bank. There was an announcement today of a ceasefire in the 11-day war between Hamas and Israel. What most do not know is that the radical Islamic group Hamas is secretly funded by Israel. He who pays the piper calls a tune. Israel did not want to fight a Palestinian nationalist movement like the PLO. So they raised a transnational radical religious group, Hamas, to act as an agent provocateur. Each Hamas terrorist attack has acted as justification for the Israeli government to move in with its military, seize more land, and take more military and police control over Palestine. It further justified its expansion and attack of surrounding Islamic countries because the attacks could be blamed on a more amorphous radical Islamic ideology that rendered all Islamic countries potential targets for Israel's expansionist plans. Radical Islam is now framed as a threat to Israel rather than a localized threat from nationalistic-minded Palestinians. There has been a resurgence of the power of the Jewish hierarchy in Israel because of the hostile Arab nations that surround Israel. That hostility is secretly encouraged by the Israeli government. For example, the Israeli government secretly funded and encouraged the growth and activities of the rabidly anti-Jewish terrorist organization Hamas. Hamas fulfills a twofold goal: undermining the influence of the secular Palestinian Liberation Organization, Fatah, Movement of the National Liberation of Palestine, and creating a hostile Islamic religious opposition to the Jewish state that was affiliated with the surrounding hostile Islamic countries. Blows an excerpt from Bloody Zion, where the author quotes the Hossein Zarusky, who explained in 2004, according to the Israeli weekly Kudrat Radish, 1987, the Islamic associations as well as university had been supported and encouraged by the Israeli military authority in charge of the civilian administration of the West Bank and Gaza. They, the Islamic associations and the university, were authorized to receive money payments from abroad. Meanwhile, the members of Fatah, Movement of the National Liberation of Palestine, and the Palestinian left were subjected to the most brutal forms of repression. The Islamists set up orphanages and health clinics, as well as a network of schools, workshops, creating employment for women, as well as a system of financial aid to the poor. And in 1978, they created an Islamic university in Gaza. The military authority was convinced these activities would weaken both the PLO and the leftist organizations in Gaza. By the end of 1992, there were 600 mosques in Gaza. Thanks to Israel's intelligence agency, Mossad, the Islamists were allowed to reinforce their presence in the occupied territory. The Hamas then launched a carefully timed campaign of attacks against civilians one day before the meeting before Palestinian and Israeli negotiators regarding the formal recognition of Israel by the National Palestinian Council. These events were largely instrumental in the formation of a right-wing Israeli government following the May 1996 election. The Hamas had built its strength through its various acts of sabotage at the peace process in a way that was compatible with the interests of the Israeli government. In turn, the latter sought in a number of ways to prevent the application of the Oslo Accords. In other words, Hamas was fulfilling the function for which it was originally created, to prevent the creation, the founding of a Palestinian state. And in this regard, Hamas and Ariel Sharon see eye to eye. They're on exactly the same wavelength. This is from the historical study. Hamas acts as agent provocateurs under the control of Mossad. The subterfuge of provocation by Hamas, justifying a retaliatory response by Israel, is exactly the strategy of Israel, as explained by Moshe Sharet, the first foreign minister of Israel and prime minister from 1954 to 1956. Sharet stated that Israel must keep a state of moral tension. Sharet said that in order to keep that moral tension, it's necessary for Israel to invent dangers, where the invented dangers act as provocations for Israel to retaliate. Hamas is just such an invented danger in keeping with the Mossad motto, by way of deception, thou shalt do war. Meanwhile, Netanyahu has declared future Gaza rocket fire will be met with a whole new level of force. As a fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas held Friday, Israeli PM Bibi Netanyahu threatened that any future rocket fire out of Gaza would be met with a whole new level of force. If Hamas thinks it will tolerate a drizzle of rockets, it is mistaken, Netanyahu said. We will respond with a whole new level of force to every instance of aggression against the Gaza envelope communities or anywhere else in Israel. The Gaza envelope refers to areas of Israel that are in range of the crude rockets that are fired from Gaza. The 11-day Israeli bombing campaign in Gaza killed at least 248 Palestinians, including 66 children in Israel. At least 12 persons were killed, fired out of Gaza, instead, including two children. Netanyahu touted the onslaught, the attack on Gaza, as an exceptional success. The U.S. stood firmly behind Israel during the violence. After the ceasefire was announced, President Biden delivered remarks and promised to help replenish Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. While he had plenty of condemnation for Hamas rocket fire, Biden failed to denounce the Israeli killing of Palestinian children. The bombardment of Gaza was sparked by planned evacuation of Palestinian families in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of occupied East Jerusalem. After days of Israeli violence against Palestinian protesters and Israeli police, reportedly storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque, firing rubber bullets and tear gas, rockets were fired out of Gaza. The initial barrage fired out of Gaza on May 10th killed no one and only left one Israeli lightly injured. Israeli first round of airstrikes in response, however, hit residential areas of Gaza and killed 20 Palestinians, including 10 children, right off the bat. Now, I have other horror stories to share with you, including that the Pentagon aims to partner with the ADL and the SPLC to spy on military members for their extremism. This is part and parcel, then, of this attack on any conservative, any militia member, anyone who supports the First and the Second Amendment, or anyone who voted for Donald Trump. Mark my words. The Pentagon, under Biden-appointed Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, is working to partner with the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League and spy on members of the military for signs of extremism, according to documents leaked to The Intercept. Now, mind you, the ADL and the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Centers really are implementing Jewish policies in America. And we know how much control the Israeli lobby has over our Congress and our media. So this is even worse. What it's doing is taking the once heretofore independent and American military and subjecting it to an internal critique using the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center as instruments. This is terrible, absolutely ghastly. This is like selecting your worst enemy to perform surgery on someone you want to alter, not benefit. This is a further indication this guy Lloyd Austin is completely unfit to serve as Secretary of Defense. The ADL has been at the forefront of internet censorship and criminalizing speech as hate, while the disgraced SPLC is best known for aggressive fundraising and compiling a hate map of extremist Christians and conservatives, which left-wing extremists use as a hit list. On April 9th, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin announced the establishment of the Countering Extremism Working Group, which would receive information from both internal and external subject matter experts who would serve as consultants. The document provided to The Intercept by a Pentagon source is not dated, but was disseminated late last month. The document states, The Countering Extremism Working Group would like to partner with experts on countering extremism and countering terrorism to better understand the scope of the problem and inform the 90-day report for the Secretary of Defense. These experts may come from advocacy groups, academia, and other areas that contribute to the fight against terrorism. The document lists Heidi Berridge, formerly of the SPLC, Leisha Brooks, and Susan Cork, currently of the SPLC, as well as Mark Pipkevich and Ryan Greer of the ADL. The Intercept was also leaked documents showing the Pentagon is planning to spy on members of the military to see if they hold extremist political views. First Amendment be damned. While it's unclear which of the individuals or groups mentioned in the Pentagon document will end up consulting, there are signs that some already have been doing so. Mark Pipkevich, a senior research fellow at the ADL, thanked the Army War College for inviting him to speak on extremism in tweets posted yesterday. As part of the Biden administration's crackdown on domestic extremism, the Pentagon plans to launch a pilot program for screening social media content for extremist material. So, you know, if you watch a Trump speech, for example, or any material coming from the Republican Party, you're going to be qualified as a domestic extremist. An extremism steering committee led by Bishop Garrison, a senior advisor to the Secretary of Defense, is currently designing the social media screening pilot program, which will continuously monitor military personnel for concerning behaviors, according to a Pentagon briefing in late March. Mind you, when you make efforts in order to integrate the military by virtue of the use of transgenders entering the military, that's a completely awful in and of itself. To have transgenders, you know, into the military, that's bad enough itself. And now they're going to go after anyone who has political views they don't like. If you want to destroy America, I can't think of a better way to proceed than seeking to destroy the American military from the inside out. This is a complete disgrace. More when we return from this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is your host, Jim Fetzer, on The Raw Deal, where I expected to take calls during the final segment of the show from the beginning to the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, the Texas Senate has passed a bill that bans critical race theory from classrooms. The Texas State Senate, which, by the way, held hearings recently that showed that the vaccine companies actually had conducted animal studies, but that all the animals had died, passed a bill Saturday prohibiting schools from mandating the teaching of critical race theory. It isn't mentioned by name, but it bans the controversial quasi-Marxist ideology in public and open enrollment charter schools. According to the bill, text teachers, administrators, or employees from state agencies, school districts, and open enrollment charter schools are prohibited from teaching students that one race is inherently superior to another, race or sex, or that one individual is an inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive by virtue of his or her race or sex. A teacher may not be compelled to discuss current events or widely debated and currently controversial issues of public policy or social affairs in social studies curriculum in Texas history, U.S. history, world history, governments, civics, social studies, or similar subjects, according to the bill. It also requires a state board of education to adopt civic education to help students understand the moral, political, and intellectual foundations of the American U.S. history and tradition and the founding documents of the United States, which is all to the good. Critical race theory espouses the idea that race is not natural or evolved or genetic, but socially constructed to oppress and exploit minorities as an offshoot of the quasi-Marxist critical theory social philosophy promoted by the Frankfurt School of Thought. Then President Donald Trump signed an executive order banning critical race theory from being taught by federal agencies in September of 2020, describing it as anti-American propaganda. The socialist ideology, however, has been embraced by President Joe Biden and his administration, Kamala Harris, reversing Trump's executive order and pushing critical race theory on all fronts. The Texas Public Policy Foundation applauded the state legislature's move, saying it will protect students. This is a huge win for Texas students. We will not allow state-funded racism in our schools or permit our students to be used as political props. Very, very good. Texans reject critical race theory and other so-called woke philosophies, said Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick in a statement on April 28th. That maintain one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex, or that any individual, by virtue of his or her race or sex, is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive. These divisive concepts have been inserted into curriculums around the state, but they have no place in Texas schools. I could not agree more. I think that's simply superlative. Meanwhile, we have advocates of critical race theory and practitioners being called to account by Tulsi Gabbard, whom I continue to admire. Tulsi has called for Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot to resign over anti-white racism, which has caused a social media uproar. But it's clear that Tulsi is in the right and the mayor in the wrong. The culture war bombshell triggered both Republicans and her fellow Democrats. Mayor Lightfoot's blatant anti-white racism is abhorrent. I call upon President Biden, Kamala Harris, and other leaders of our country of all races to join me in calling for Mayor Lightfoot's resignation. Our leaders must condemn all racism, including anti-white. Gabbard was referring to Lightfoot's decision this week to grant interviews only to black or brown journalists, citing the need for diversity and inclusion in the media. It was the words anti-white that drew the ire of online Democrats as they piled on Gabbard to insist there is no such thing. Many sought to redefine the very notion of racism, not as discrimination based on race, as does U.S. law, but as the power plus privilege relationship championed by critical race theory. Meanwhile, anyone who would like to demand the removal of Lori Lightfoot from office, you're welcome to do so. There's a number where you can call to report your views. I did so yesterday. The number is 312-744-4000. I repeat, 312-744-4000. If you believe that Mayor Lightfoot is promoting racism and causing greater divisions within American society, and that she is an unworthy mayor of the once great city of Chicago, if you call this number, 312-744-4000, you will find, no doubt as I found, a very nice woman there listening to what I had to say. Be sure you do so in a polite way. Identify yourself, your reasons for calling, and why you think that Lori Lightfoot ought to resign her office as mayor of Chicago. I think that would be a worthwhile thing to do. There's no such thing as racism, tweeted anti-white racism, tweeted transactivist Charlotte Clymer. There are no systemic or widely cultural barriers for white people that infringe on how we move through the world. This is silly as hell. Conservatives, on the other hand, held up Gabbard's tweet as an example of courage the Republican Party did not possess. Is there any Republican elected official who has called out Mayor Lightfoot's behavior as explicitly anti-white? Asked Darren Beatty, a former Trump speechwriter who now runs Revolver.news. Remember, Tulsi is a Democrat and a terrific person, in my opinion. I was actually at one point contemplating that Trump might run for his second term with Tulsi rather than Mike Pence, who has disappointed all of us, I think, beyond belief. The fact that Gabbard called for Lightfoot's resignation before congressional Republicans did is not a good look for the GOP, said Logan Hall of the Daily Caller. The Columbia Bugle likewise wondered if the party needed to get permission from Frank Luntz, the telemarketer who is a landlord to House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, before they join Tulsi. Remember, we've had an expose of Frank Luntz as being a Democrat who conducts these focus groups for Republicans, and where I think there's no doubt about it in retrospect, slants things to favor Democrat talking points. Meanwhile, here's an objective definition of racism. Noun: prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism directed against a person or people on the basis of their membership in a particular racial or ethnic group. Description: racism is the belief that groups of humans possess different behavioral traits corresponding to physical appearance and can be divided based on the superiority of one race over another. It may also mean prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism directed against other people because they are of a different ethnicity. Now, bear in mind, I have published extensively on evolution and the difference between genetic and cultural evolution, which is very much at stake here. And I guarantee you, there are all kinds of genetic differences among various races, where there are as many as, say, 23 different categories, just depending upon how it's undertaken. I'm talking about objective scientific analysis, because different groups tend to evolve differently under different geographical circumstances, so that a group isolated on an island, for example, is going to develop and evolve in a different way than those who are not. Where the out-of-Africa hypothesis has it that humanity originated in Africa and then spread upward over the Asian continent, and depending upon the climate and the geography, different subpopulations of populations evolved in different ways. This is rather copiously documented in my book, The Evolution of Intelligence. Anyone with a serious interest in these issues, therefore, may want to take a look. Meanwhile, and I don't want to cause dismay here, but we have a world-famous virologist who has stated blankly, brace yourself. There is no hope and no possible treatment for them. We must be prepared to incinerate the bodies. All of them will die within 2 years. They will all die from antibody-dependent enhancement. Nothing more can be said. This is Luc Montagnier, a French virologist and joint Nobel Prize recipient, about those who receive one of the COVID shots. And he's talking, I think, specifically about the Moderna and the Pfizer. But what he says may also apply to Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca. This is really serious stuff. And I encourage everyone to take a look, to do more research. Remember, I myself, Jim Fetzer, am a PH, not an MD. I'm not a virologist. I'm not an epidemiologist. I am a student of reports about the coronavirus pandemic, and have been reporting virtually every day, for over a year now on these matters. You can find many of my reports in other presentations by experts in the field, such as Sherry Tenpenny, who has described these mRNA vaccines as perfectly designed killing machines on my BitChute site, on my BitChute channel, BitChute channel Jim Fetzer. Also on Telegram at t.me/JimFetzerNews. You can find them there. Not to mention what I have on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. given that background, it's rather shocking that Governor Newsom is sending back checkers door to door in California. Thousands have been hired by the state of California to knock on doors asking residents if they've been vaccinated, the goal being to target vaccinating hesitant and get as many Californians vaccinated as possible. According to Governor Newsom's office, they've hired 2,000 people to make peer-to-peer appeals and provide support to help overcome barriers to vaccination. There are no barriers to vaccination, however, only people who don't want to take them, and for good reason. The door-to-door vax checks are taking place in the following counties: Alameda, Fresno, Kern, Los Angeles, Merced, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, Sacramento, San Diego, Santa Barbara, Tulare, and Ventura counties. 34,804,886 total vaccines have been administered in California. Think about it. If the Nobel Prize-winning recipient is correct that everyone who gets a vaccine will die within 2 years, then it looks as though we're going to have already a minimal number, 34,804,886 deaths in California in the next 2 years. 39% of California residents are fully vaccinated, another 12% partially vaccinated. The report's 40 to 50% of healthcare workers, however, are not taking the vaccine, as well as 40 to 50% of the teachers and even 40 to 50% of the employees at the CDC. Why not? Well, they may be paying attention. Odometers, which keeps statistics worldwide, has some very interesting results of surveys of over 200,000 worldwide. Are you getting the COVID-19 vaccine? Yes. Less than 9% no. Over 91%. Should masks be mandatory? Yes. Less than 9% no, over 91%. Was government reaction to COVID-19 worse than the virus? Yes. Over 90% no, less than 10%. Do you trust the World Health Organization? Yes. Less than 7% no, over 93%. Do you support lockdowns or military involvement? No. Yes. Just over 7%. No. Over 92%. Was COVID-19 politicized by mainstream media? Yes. 94%+. No. 5%+. Meanwhile, we have reports of vaccine shedding causing miscarriages and blood clots in unvaccinated females, where the Pfizer vaccine has killed 40 times more than COVID-19, and that's going to be just by the AVIRS reporting system, which only gets 1%. So I'd say you could add a couple of zeros and say Pfizer is killing 4,000 times more than COVID-19. This is all completely grotesque and objectionable. I would briefly observe that Judicial Watch is reporting that plane loads of illegal immigrant minors are being located around the United States in the middle of the night. In an apparent effort to avoid public scrutiny, the Biden administration is transporting plane loads of illegal immigrant minors in the middle of the night and then busing them to cities in the Southeast. Even members of Congress representing the impacted districts are being kept in the dark about the covert operations, and the Department of Defense is contracting big tour buses to move the migrants to nearby states once they land, presumably from the border region. I want to share with you now on a more personal level a report about my lawsuit. It's very serious stuff. And I'm fairly astonished by what's going on these days. On my blog, you can find a wonderful piece by Ron Avery to support the Sandy Hook narrative. Wisconsin Court of Appeals District 4 makes gross errors. Now, this is Ron Avery. On 7 May 2021, Dr. James Fetzer filed his appeal to the Wisconsin Supreme Court to review the rulings of the circuit and appellate courts of Wisconsin, finding that Dr. Fetzer committed libel as a matter of law by publishing that a death certificate of Leonard Posner's son was a fake. Yet all agreed that the said death certificate was not sealed and signed by the necessary parties to complete it. I discovered this case early on and created a website to archive the most important court documents filed in the case at a dedicated website and archive. The obvious, deceptive, and ridiculous rulings violated all the principles of the use and purpose of a summary judgment in every state of the union. A summary judgment is a judicial tool to expedite judicial proceedings when all the relevant alleged facts of both parties are not in dispute, meaning there's no need for a jury of one's peers to find the facts to make sure all the elements of a claim are present before damages can be determined and awarded. But when there are disputed facts relevant to the elements of a claim, a summary judgment cannot be employed, and a jury of one's peers must be called to find the relevant facts. One cannot find the elements of a legal damage claim if the facts of the case are not known. And if the two parties disagree as to the alleged facts, a jury must be called. But if both parties agree to the facts, then why have a jury to find facts? Simple, right? Not simple in Wisconsin. There are some rules to assure that those who have a summary judgment against them are not cheated out of due process and a chance to be heard by a jury if the law is being applied to the wrong set of facts. First, there cannot be any relevant facts pleaded by either party that are in dispute. Second, all questions of fact must be resolved in favor of the non-movement, the defendant, or the one the summary judgment is filed against by the other party. Third, all inferences that can reasonably be drawn from the facts pled by the non-movement must be made. These are the three main rules. All three were violated in the summary judgment against Dr. Fetzer. First, there are few, if any, facts alleged by the parties that are not in dispute. Mr. Posner claimed that the death certificate, without all the seals and signatures, was not fake, and that his son was killed at the alleged Sandy Hook Elementary mass shooting. Dr. Fetzer filed a plethora of evidence to support his allegations that no one died at Sandy Hook, and hence no death certificate from that event could be real and authentic. His evidence included a book he edited entitled, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill to promote gun control. First edition, 2015, second, 2016. Listen to the opinion of the Wisconsin Fourth Court of Appeals in stating the undisputed facts in this case. Quote, on December 14, 2012, a mass shooting occurred at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. Tragically, 26 people were killed, including 6 staff members and 20 children who were aged 6 and 7, citing Jones versus Heslin, stating Neil Heslin's son was killed in the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in December 2012, and rejecting the substantial truth doctrine as a basis to dismiss Heslin's defamation claim related to statements disputing Heslin's assertion that he held his deceased son in his arms. Soto versus Bushmaster Firearms also. On December 14, 2012, 20-year-old Adam Lonza forced his way into Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown and, during the course of 264 seconds, fatally shot 20 first graders and 6 staff members and wounded 2 others. Posner's 6-year-old son, N, was one of the children killed during the Sandy Hook shooting, end quote. How on earth did the above scenario become the undisputed facts in this case? When did Dr. Fetzer agree to that set of facts? There is no such agreement anywhere on record. Therefore, this violates the first rule on summary judgments. Notice also that the appellate court cited 2 cases to deceive the casual reader that Sandy Hook is an adjudicated reality. But when these cases are reviewed, we find that neither considered what happened at Sandy Hook. This is unethical to attempt to trick the reader into thinking that Sandy Hook is an adjudicated fact of history when neither case reached the question, much less answered it affirmatively. Second, all fact issues in question were resolved in favor of the mover, Mr. Posner, rather than the non-movement, Dr. Fetzer, as required by law. Several times the circuit judge said he was not going down that rabbit hole or going to educate himself on the larger controversy. Well, I'm sorry, but he doesn't have that lawful discretion to ignore the relevant alleged facts of the non-movement, which bear on the issue of the authenticity of an alleged death certificate coming from an event that did not happen. Prior to granting the summary judgment, the judge must resolve any fact question in favor of the non-movement, Dr. Fetzer. For the judge to have granted this summary judgment, it would need to sound or read as follows. We take Dr. Fetzer's allegation of fact and true, and all questions of fact are resolved in his favor, and all inferences from his facts are made showing that the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary did not happen on December 14, 2012. We now find that Dr. Fetzer defamed Mr. Posner when he published statements that the death certificate of Posner's son, the victim of that event, was fake. Does this not shock your senses? Is this not a slap in the face of human intelligence? This is a logical equation, and it cannot be altered without altering the other side. In order to find Dr. Fetzer guilty of libel in this case, they must accept his allegations of fact and all inferences from those facts and find that Sandy Hook never happened. But rather than do as they should have and deny Mr. Posner's motion for summary judgment, they granted it and at the same time resolved all questions of fact in favor of Mr. Posner. They cheated and continue the state of war against Dr. Fetzer and his property. Third, all reasonable inferences must be drawn from the non-movement's allegation of facts, concluding that Sandy Hook never happened and therefore no death certificate resulting from that event could be real or legitimate. So all three of the main rules of summary judgment are violated in the rulings of the circuit and appellate courts in Wisconsin. To further illustrate the complete saturation of this case with judicial corruption, the circuit court granted the summary judgment in favor of Mr. Posner after Dr. Fetzer had provided not one but two document authenticity experts who both testified that the four versions introduced into the case at that point in time, the one published in the book, the one attached to the complaint, one obtained from the Newtown clerk, and a fourth from the state of Connecticut, which were different versions of the same death certificate, were fake. Mr. Posner presented the testimony of a funeral homeowner who said he filled out part of the death certificate but did not provide even one expert to attest to their authenticity. Back after this break and with the calls, the number for calls.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Notwithstanding my eagerness to take callers, and we have two standing by because I'm reporting what Ron Avery had to say about the case, I must complete what he had to say. It's also extremely well stated. I mean, this is such a lucid characterization. You can find it on my blog as well. I continue. The judge and the jury have seated must go with the opinion of any uncontested expert witness. These two experts, being uncontested, should have resulted in the dismissal of the case against Dr. Fetzer instead of a grant of summary judgment against him. But let's presume the judge wanted to hear more of the facts in this case. He should have denied summary judgment and sent the case to trial, as the two experts raised a disputed fact issue as to the authenticity of the death certificate in question. If Posner really wants to win this suit, he must do it before a jury, not on summary judgment. And all these judges know it more than anyone else. And for that, they should be disbarred. I continue with Ron Avery's discussion. There is another travesty in this case which springs from the abuse of judicial proceedings. Dr. Fetzer released some discovery that was ruled to be confidential, a means of crying out for help, and he was fined several thousand dollars for contempt of court. At a later time, he released more discovery that was ruled confidential. This time, the judge awarded Mr. Posner attorney fees as a penalty for Dr. Fetzer's continuing contempt of court in the amount of $650,000, an outrageous amount considering the following. The jury that was called to hear Mr. Posner's damage evidence awarded $450,000, but the judge awarded $650,000 in attorney fees for contempt of court. It seems extremely zealous to award more for contempt of court than what the plaintiff gets from a jury. Dr. Fetzer's contempt of court seemed to be warranted by the treatment he received and continues to receive in this so-called judicial system. All the rulings of the circuit and appellate courts should be reversed and the case remanded to the circuit court for trial on the merits, with special instructions that the defendant's pleadings will no longer be ignored, no matter how unpleasant they may seem. The only explanation for the hyper level of judicial corruption in this case is the fear of the mass media cartel and the political environment it creates and maintains. That milieu has made judges irrational and harmful to themselves and others. It's time for the Supreme Court of Wisconsin to return its courts to law and order and hang the mass media cartel narratives. Ron Avery. Again, you can find it on my blog. We have two callers standing by. Anyone else who'd like to call, the number 540-352-4452. The first caller, Paul from California. Paul.
Speaking of extremist political views, you know, I got to say, you pack so much into an hour, much less an hour and a half. You cover so many things. There's 5, 6, 7 things that people, including myself, could comment or would want to comment on. But let me take the most recent first. Everything that you just read and the things that you said about your case are, to use your phrase, spot on. Okay, it's great stuff. Unfortunately, none of it matters. That's not the world we live in now. Our enemy, the Jews, have turned everything that we have, every system in this country, to shit. They've turned the legal system into a hall of mirrors, and the laws that are already decided and written on the books into suggestions. That's all that you're looking at. I watched a tape, an interview from the 90s with Eustace Mullins, and as you know, Eustace Mullins was a prolific author and a great mind, and he saw clearly what's happened and what is going to happen. And he wrote a book called Rape of Justice. I highly recommend it. It's a great read, The Rape of Justice by Eustace Mullins. In this interview, he said the only thing to be in our current legal system is a plaintiff. Do not be a defendant under any circumstances. Essentially what he said, I could find the probably find the interview, the clip, and I could send it to you. And he talked about the fact of all the things that are open to you as a plaintiff, and that you can continue with all that, you can continue to push the case and tie these people down with all the requests and the paperwork that you can submit. Now, that would be in a normal system, you know, as well. But what we're dealing with now is beyond, you know, beyond corrupt. And as I'm not going to mention, you know, like, quote, predicted it, because I would have predicted it 10 or 15 years ago. I could have told you, don't even go. Keep your money. I mean, I don't know how much you're out of pocket. I know you're out of pocket at least $7,000 for that fine that you paid, which you never would have had to pay if you didn't go. I would have not gone at all. Let them get their so-called judgment and let them try to collect. I'm sorry to report to you that you're never, ever going to get justice out of this system. Just like the election is never going to be overturned. I don't care what Arizona does or Pennsylvania or Michigan, or none of these states are going to have audits. And there's not going to be a domino effect. And somehow, you know, Biden and Harris is going to be nullified and Trump will be reinstalled. That's not the world that we live in. Okay. They let us know in clear language and clear gestures that your vote doesn't matter. All you Trump voters, you can vote for Trump all you want. Doesn't matter. The facts don't matter. This is a war. They're waging a war against us. The last thing I'll mention, you can take the next caller, because as you know, I could just keep going on one of my rants, but they're planting these people, these ethnic, you know, outsiders into all these various little parts of the country. Like, they're moving them to the Southeast now, because the Southeast is not yet where, say, for example, California. California is now basically Brazil, all right? You would have to have lived out here for the last 30, 40 years to see the transformation that's taken place. They're making a racial war upon us. What they're trying to do is to destroy our racial, ethnic, and genetic heritage. That's their goal. Every white country on the planet is in danger in the near future of losing its majority white status. Everything else is just a means to wage the war. The economic and political methods are means to wage the genetic racial war against us. Thanks for hearing me say it once again, Jim. You know, I appreciate you and your shows.
You got it, Paul. You got it. And yes, we do have standing by Bruce from Texas. Bruce, please, your thoughts.
Yeah, I have to agree with everything Paul said. He's exactly right. I wish you the best, though. I don't know what plans you have or how you can manage through the rest of your life, but it's very tragic. I want to turn to Ashley Babbitt. You say that was not a real shooting.
That's my suspicion, yes, that it was a staged shooting, not a bona fide, yes.
Okay. Her family is filing a $10 million lawsuit against the Capitol Police for wrongful death. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, well, good luck. You see, the government perpetrates these frauds and then has to pay off, you know, make it look as though it were legit. I mean, listen, I stand by the principle that I will revise my opinions or my conclusions based upon new evidence and alternative hypotheses. And if it should turn out that I'm wrong, if Ashley Babbitt actually was killed in spite of my present belief, the weight of the evidence suggests she was not, then I will revise my opinion. But it's certainly my present stance that that was a staged event, that she posed no threat to the officer in charge. He's not been reprimanded. He ought to have been reprimanded because she didn't pose a threat to him. It was therefore not a justifiable shoot. The only reason I can imagine that would not be done is because it was staged and she was a part of the hoax. When he fired, there wasn't any flinching. There wasn't any ducking. Nobody, you know, acted as though it were anything that came as a surprise. She fell back out of the window, was laid gently on the ground. None of it seemed legitimate. There was no blood spurting from her neck. She appeared to have been given a small packet of blood to add some verisimilitude, but there was no EMT treatment. She was carried out by her feet and her shoulders, totally inappropriate. Should have been done on a stretcher, should have had emergency treatment right there on the scene. Based upon my experience, this was a staged event and not a bona fide shoot. Bruce, that's my opinion.
I got it. The shooter has been identified on the internet and also in at least one British publication or website, news website, as David Bailey. Are you familiar with this guy? He's from Brazil.
Tell us about David Bailey. Tell us about him, Bruce.
Yeah, he's, I don't have the full page in front of me. I can look for it, but I don't want to take up more time. But for what I recall, he's from Brazil. He's a Brazilian native, naturalized U.S. citizen, who is an active member of Black Lives Matter. And I can send you in your email the material I have that matches the gunman with him. And he got a lot of Facebook support, you know, be safe, you know, we hope it ends up well for you. You did what you had to do, that type of stuff, and he didn't deny it. So if there was a shooting, that would be the guy who did it, and then it's logical that the global homo will protect them at all costs, you know, in charge of the U.S. Capitol. And as a final thought, and I'm not trying to be, snarky here, but JFK didn't bleed very much, if at all, either, when he was shot in the neck, as you proposed.
Bruce, I missed something. Go ahead. Repeat that key bottom line. What are you thinking about this guy? You think this guy was a legit or a fake player?
No, he is legit. He is a Capitol Police. When he was at the same shooting where Scalise was shot, that softball game.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yeah.
And what was your comparison with JFK?
Well, JFK, you say the Zapruder film's fake, but he didn't bleed very much from the neck. In fact, he grabbed his neck and there was no blood on the front of his shirt or on the back until the second shot.
This is very complicated. There was a lot of blood on his back. He was shot in the back. There's blood in his shirt. I don't know how familiar you are with all this, Bruce, but, I've gone into this in great detail. He was shot in the throat. It was a clean puncture wound, a small hole. There was no reason there ought to have been blood on the front of his shirt. There was blood on the back. He was also shot in the back. Then he was shot multiple times. Initially, we thought two in the head, but David now believes he was shot a third time in the head. I could go into that in great detail, but your point, I think, is not well made if you think that's supposed to be a good comparison to Ashley Babbitt. I take it you're inclined to believe Ashley Babbitt actually was shot.
Well, yeah, there's a picture of her with an endotracheal tube inside her mouth with blood all over it, blood all over her neck, blood all over the stretcher. And blood that comes out of the neck, especially the lungs, is bright red. JFK was shot in the throat. He would have expelled blood through that puncture hole. I'm a paramedic who has done two field tracheostomies. And so I have a little bit of experience with that. You know, not a great
deal. Okay, very good. Very good.
That's all I got.
Okay, very, very, very good. Let me see if we have any other callers here before I invite Paul to comment further. I see his, I have this report about Agent David Bailey. Mitchell, would you like to comment on this David Bailey thing? What's your take, Mitchell? Do you think Ashley Babbitt was a legit shooter or no?
I don't know. Hard telling because of all the chaos that was there and still the disinformation surrounding it. I think that's one of the tools they use so they can manage the outcome of any event. And it's so hard to look through that.
Okay, well, I stand by my position. I see we have a caller from the 412 area code. Caller, please give us your name and your state and join the conversation.
Hey, Jim and Bruce from Texas and Paul from California and Jim and Mitch. This is actually Scaredy Cat. And I am in, my mom is inside the building with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I'm here in Ohio. So I'm just going to go on hold and go inside because I know the program is over in 10 minutes and see if I can get the good doctor to talk.
Oh, Sherry Tenpenny's wonderful. We couldn't really take full advantage of her here. You mean you want to see if Sherry Tenpenny could join us now for 5 minutes?
Yeah, I'm going to run inside the building. I'm in the car. My mom is inside with her, so
I have interviewed her before, Scaredy Cat. I have interviewed her before. And listen, I think that would be an imposition, but I appreciate your making the offer. Let's not do it. I want to see, did you want to comment on any other aspect of the show? Or since you're there with her, probably you've been preoccupied, right?
Well, the thing is that I think we have to, Paul from California is right. I'm coming around to thinking that we are already in the war of the good guys versus the bad guys. And we have been talking and looking and searching and looking for hints and signs and evidences. When is it going to really turn bad, really turn bad? But I think a better way I'm coming to realize is to think that we are in the war. We've lost. We're all prisoners of war now, POWs. And we just have to now get a hold of like shears and start so that, or spoons so we can dig tunnels through the dirt or cut shears in the barbed wire. And I think that if we take that attitude in terms of like, you know, by hook and by hook, if we can gain one brick at a time, I think because looking to see when will the real trouble start, that I think is just leading us like a pipe down the Pied Piper's garden lane. Go ahead.
Okay, down the Pied Piper's garden lane. Okay, I'm just delighted you're there with Sherry Tenpenny. You want to take full advantage of that, Scaredy Cat. I mean, it's just wonderful you're there. Paul, are you still with us? Paul,
if you'd like.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Scaredy.
No, I was going to say it was a long wait. I talked back in January and February. So this has been a 3 or 4 month waiting list. And I just meant to speak every family member one by one, you know, to her to overlook their body and their life. Yeah. Everybody has a different thing. Like my children are young. They're at a childbearing, you know, they all have fiancés or a marriage. My mom obviously is the senior generation, so it's a different body, an older body. Myself, I'm middle-aged, you know, and women, men, I think everybody should come. So every 3 or 4 okay. months, I think I'm going to end up down here with every single family member.
Yeah, Paul, go ahead. Add some further thoughts, Paul.
Okay, so what I would also just like to remind you and everybody else, too, that's listening, that the points that Bruce was making are valid in terms of it's always important to know that what they're doing on a regular basis is to give us these events, you know, fake or real, as a distraction, as something to talk about that's, you know, maybe important in the smaller picture, and they want us to believe it affects the bigger picture, but the plans are already made and the plans are already laid. My take would be along the same lines, for example, with the audits in the states and the election and, you know, election reform and all these sorts of things. Okay, that's all good. It's the right idea. And in principle, it's the right thing to do. However, I think that it's completely meaningless if the people in power, the deep state, you know, the Jewish power structure, controls all the means of propaganda, controls all the networks, controls all of Hollywood, all of the press, controls the issuance of money at interest on loan to government, basically on loan to us all. If that all remains, and you know it will, then what's the point? What's the difference? That's where I'm coming from, and I've been saying for years, there's no political way out of this. None. And I know it's a hard, you know, pill to swallow, and it would take away a lot to talk about. And I'm, you know, I still encourage everybody, if they want to talk about politics, it's fine. But the die is cast. I mean, it's fight or die, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm looking in the future at a cemetery with tombstones, with a headstone. And the headstone, you know, reads, "Here lies the white race. They gave us many things, civilization. They gave us a constitution. But unfortunately, they were afraid to be racist and to hold their own territory." That's the tombstone that I see. That's the song that I've been singing for years. And I appreciate you giving me the venue to say it. And for the moment, I'll rest.
Yeah, very good, very good. Bruce, did you want to add a few words? Bruce, are you still with us? Scaredy, are you still here?
Yes, hi. Sorry.
Go ahead and say further thoughts you may have.
Well, this kind of goes along with everything you said today about all this warring that the powerfully rich are bombing on the poor and regular people. Last time you had asked me about to give me on the last show about thoughts on Gaza, and I answered in a more generalized way about, I know it sounds rude, but I'll just say it again, JWO, the very rich Jews world owe for ownership. So that is the big engine. It's every deed, every, not only acre of land that's being dispossessed, poor, you know, normal people thrown out, even here in America with, you know, homeless and everything, and then the very rich taking over the deeds to the property. So not only is every acre deed signed over to the filthy rich, but soon it'll be inch by inch and every speck of dust. I mean, in my mind, I came up with a little cartoon, you know, like the rich systems, which are becoming more and more cemented and solidified. That is to capture money. The big corporations is the one group, and the other group is individuals going to big banks. And so I relate that to the war, which is soon going to be the war, maybe even bombs dropping or little drones and so on Americans, on English. It's the headquarters of cruelty. which stolen Palestine, that little strip of land, which used to be administered by the Turks originally 150 years ago. And for hundreds of years, that was Christendom belonged, Europe belonged to Christendom, and Asia, West Asia, belonged a little bit of North Africa, belonged to the Islamic community. And for centuries, Palestine was administered or governed by various Muslim kings, and people say the Ottoman Turks. Well, Ottoman is only a name for Osman, King Osman, so it's just a Muslim king. And so now, because inch by inch it has been stolen, when there is a group of people who are governing and who do not declare borders, it is not a real country. So that's my point of saying Israel is not a real country. So all it is a gang of rich people, and it needs to be dismantled brick by brick, whatever false buildings they've built, called the settlements especially, because all it is this gang of people is just, it's become the headquarters of cruelty for the whole world. Even America's military, Iowa should be CENTCOM. In other words, the central command focus and core of America's defense should be, you know, Idaho, the heartland, Mississippi. Instead, what is CENTCOM? We are only NORTHCOM. Florida is only SOUTHCOM. Where is CENTCOM? CENTCOM is stolen
scary.
Palestine.
Yeah. Scary, I want to thank you for all that. I thought you and Paul and Bruce made very valuable contributions. For those who are following my case, there's a late breaking development. You'll find my latest blog on the case is the Supreme Court had set aside my petition for their consideration as being untimely. We had requested they reconsider that because it was timely. They have accepted our reconsideration and are now going to accept my petition for review by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Frankly, I'm very relieved by this. I'd been profoundly upset that they appeared to be pulling a fast one here, and it now looks as though they are correcting their own error. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday with the event.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you? We'll be right back.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was...